Blog Talk Radio.
How's everybody doing today? I got a jam-packed, what I think will be a great show for you. Donald Trump literally wants a redo of an election. Donald, that's not a thing. Like, that's not a thing that ever happens. What are you saying? I'm going to open up with that story because it's just so funny. Oh my God, then it somehow gets funnier. We got Jeb Bush, who, I don't want to ruin the story now, but just know he's beyond the point of desperation. I mean, I'm starting to feel bad for him, which I thought was mission impossible for me to feel bad for a member of the Bush family. But perhaps you'll feel that way too, after I give you the detail there. Sad news regarding Rand Paul. We'll discuss that. I mean, I guess some people will celebrate it, but Rand Paul's dropping out of the race, which means that there are now zero sane voices on the stage during the main debates. I'm not happy about that. But anyway, a lot of other stuff too, including some poll numbers and how Bernie Sanders' agenda looks. We got Jimmy Kimmel pretending like Jesus is a Republican and doing a great skit involving that concept. That one I have to share with you guys. And then later on in the show, we have... I got so many different religious nutbags in today's show, I don't know how to make sense of all of it. We got insane, crazy Christians. We got insane, crazy Muslims. We got... Actually, that's pretty much it. I don't have any Hindus. Sorry, guys. I'll pick on you another day. Oh, Michelle Bachmann, too. But she obviously is included in the insane Christian category. All right, let's go ahead and get it started here. And we'll do that with our buddy, who provides us endless entertainment on a daily basis, Donald Trump. Donald Trump literally wants a redo of the Iowa caucus. This story is already incredible because apparently nobody told Donald Trump, dude, that's not a thing. Like, that's not an option. That's not something that anybody could ever conceive of or try to do. Or the guy is having verbal diarrhea in front of the world, and he's either making a clown of himself or he's clowning all of us, and he's been trolling us all along, or what's most likely is probably a mix of both. So let me go ahead and give you what The Hill says here. They report, quote, Trump is accusing Republican presidential rival Ted Cruz of committing fraud ahead of Monday night's Iowa caucuses, and he is calling for a new election. Based on the fraud committed by Senator Ted Cruz during the Iowa caucus, either a new election should take place or Cruz results nullified. Where did Donald Trump say this? Of course, sticking with the same kind of strategy that he's been using all along, he said it on Twitter, which makes it even funnier. Now, earlier in the day, he also tweeted and then quickly deleted this, quote, Ted Cruz didn't win Iowa. He illegally stole it. That is why all the polls were so wrong and why he got so many more votes than anticipated. Bad. He ended it with bad, with an exclamation mark, of course. That's so Donald Trumpian. You always have to have something that's just emoting. A word or a term that just emotes to try to convey your message like a kindergartner. So Cruz campaign fired back. And I must admit, as much as I despise Ted Cruz and as much as I think he's perhaps even worse than Donald Trump, this is kind of witty. They said, reality just hit the reality star. He lost Iowa, and now nobody is talking about him, so he's popping off on Twitter. There are support groups for Twitter addiction. Perhaps he should find his local chapter. All right, now, in reality here, believe it or not, Trump is half right. Part that he's half wrong is obvious. You don't, that's not possible to do a redo of the Iowa caucuses. That's a ridiculous idea, and everybody should mock it, and everybody is mocking it. It's just so profoundly unserious of an idea. He's wrong about that. But in terms of Ted Cruz and was Ted Cruz playing dirty politics or not, the answer to that is, oh, absolutely. There were multiple stories that broke about him and his campaign doing exactly that. So one of the things that they did was I even fell for it. They spread a rumor about Ben Carson, about how Ben Carson is leaving the Iowa caucuses early because he needs to go to Florida to get a change of clothes. And in reality, they said, "Hey, he's dropping out. This is a sign of suspending his campaign." One of Cruz's top staffers or people who one of his top backers, Steve King of Iowa, the congressman, he said he's the one who started spreading this, and then it caught on like a wildfire, and then every news organization was tweeting about it. Like, "Ooh, is Ben Carson spending his campaign? I guess he's spending his campaign." And then a lot of people allegedly acted on the assumption that Ben Carson was going to drop out that night in the race, people in Iowa. So instead of caucusing for Carson, a lot of them went over to Cruz. Or so the story goes. I'm not sure about that particular detail in terms of how many people actually said, "I was going to go for Carson, but now Cruz because I think Carson is dropping out." But the rumor was spread, and it was spread at least in part by the Cruz campaign. Now, furthermore, in the days leading up to the Iowa caucus, there were stories about how Cruz's campaign was sending out mailers that to potential supporters that had a fake grade on it. It was like an election report card, which said, "Okay, this person gets a D, this person gets an F. You're not, civically involved enough. You haven't done your job in going to vote." And it's a way to try to get people who are uneducated to feel like, "Oh, I really got to go caucus. I really got to go take part in this election because apparently my grade's not that good." And they try to make it look like it was official. It said like voter something notice in bold letters on, when they received it on the cover. So yeah, there's no doubt about it that doing dirty politics. But that doesn't mean that you can redo an election. In fact, you can't redo an election. And I love how Donald Trump all of a sudden is surprised that, gosh golly, the Republicans do dirty tricks for the elections. I don't know how many of you guys know this story, but it was the Bush campaign that did this thing called push polling. I forget what state it was in, but basically staffers would call up people who were considering voting for John McCain, and they said, "Would you be more likely or less likely to vote for John McCain if you heard that he fathered an illegitimate black baby?" Now, of course, he didn't do that. But people who were listening to it assumed, I guess he fathered an illegitimate black baby, or else why would the pollster be asking me this question? And push polling is something, it's been done, on the Republican side of the aisle, I think for decades now. So Republicans are used to this. This is just another day. This is a day that ends in Y in a Republican election across America. So for Donald Trump to play coy here, surprised, like, "Oh my goodness, I can't believe it." Donald, I'm sure that you and your campaign and your staffers, if you haven't been involved in dirty tricks yet, you're going to do it, and you probably have already been involved in dirty tricks. And the few policies you've advocated for are in and of themselves incredibly dirty. Like the idea of banning all Muslims from entering the United States, until you figure out what's going on. Or what, not, this isn't a policy, but when you said about the Mexicans, well, they're rapists. I assume some of them are good people, but they're rapists. What the fuck, man? Or when you said we should kill the families of terrorists. These are all, you're advocating for war crimes. This is lunacy. But now all of a sudden he's like, "Oh my God, decency. Have some decency. Have some respect. What are you kidding me? You sent out a misleading mailer? Well, that crosses a line, mister." I think all of you guys crossed the line a long, long time ago. But overall here, Cruz did use dirty tricks. Nobody should be surprised by that. And it's okay to point that out, Donald, but no, you can't get a redo of the election. That's not a thing. Okay. Redo of the election. Scrap that. All right, that we get a mulligan? Is that a mulligan? Let's say that's a mulligan. Speaking of mulligans, Donald Trump, there are various reports of him being a cheater at golf. And actually, it's not just like, something that I've read about and heard about. It's also something I know somebody who was in a club or is in a club that's the same one of the same clubs that he's a member at. Trump is a member at like 800 clubs, of course, because he's Donald fucking Trump, and he has a zillion golf courses too. But even he says, yeah, no, like everybody at the club knows, and they say, yeah, he's a cheater, of course. It was a story about how he pretended like he got the course record at a certain golf course, but the people he were playing with, they were fucking with him, and they were giving him putts inside of like all putts like 10 feet or 12 feet and in. They'd be like, "That's good, Don. That's good. Pick that one up, no problem." And they wanted to push him to see how far he would go, and the putts would go out to like 12 feet. And if they give it to him, he'd be like, "Oh, thanks, I appreciate it." He'd pick it up and they move on to the next hole. At the end of the day, he's like, "Look at that, I got the course record." Donald, you don't have the fucking course record. That's not how this works. He called up Golf Digest and everything. Anyway, it's a long story. But anywho, let's go to the other sad case here. Jeb Bush. Oh God. I believe I have a clip for this as well, which makes it that much funnier. I was tweeting about this earlier, so this story might already be spoiled for some of you, but you'll get to hear me really enjoy it, bask in this story. The New York Times has a rather hilarious story out about Jeb Bush and what he's doing in New Hampshire today. So obviously he got thoroughly embarrassed and absolutely destroyed in Iowa, but he's staying in the race because he wants more abuse. So they say the following, quote, "Asked Tuesday evening by reporters how well he felt he needed to do in New Hampshire, excuse me, to justify staying in the race, Mr. Bush struck a defiant note. Oh yeah, I'm continuing. I'm continuing on. Yeah." Okay, that's a quote. So they ask him, "Hey man, how well do you think you have to do in New Hampshire in order to continue and stay in the race?" And he doesn't even answer. He's like, "No, I'm staying in totally, man. Everything's going great. I'm continuing on. We're gonna win this thing. We're gonna do a comeback. Let me tell you." Yeah. The quote is, "Oh, I'm continuing. I'm continuing on. Yeah." That's his literal quote. Dude, pay attention. They didn't ask you that. They're asking for specific numbers and stuff. Like, okay, so and a lot of they go on to say in the article, like most analysts are saying, he's got to do better than Marco Rubio in, the next primary, so that at least the establishment can continue backing him, because they've of course given him a tremendous amount of money up to this point, but now they're shifting to Marco Rubio because Marco Rubio seems like the more plausible fallback candidate, establishment fallback candidate, because he did so much better in Iowa. But he doesn't give that answer, which would be a logical answer. He's like, "Oh yeah, no, totally. It's doing great. We'll continue on. Thanks. I'm Jeb Bush. Jeb!" Exclamation mark. Okay, so we're just getting started with how immensely sad this is. Here's the best part. Quote, "Speaking to a crowd at the Hanover Inn near the Vermont border during his final stop of the day, Mr. Bush finished a fiery riff about protecting the country as commander-in-chief. He said, 'I won't be out here blowharding, talking a big game without backing it up.' And then they say he was met with total silence." You ready for this? He goes, "Please clap. Sounding defeated." And then the crowd laughed and clapped in like a awkward, what appears to be like a sympathy, hey, break the tension by clapping and get this over with kind of thing. Oh my God, Jeb, you asked the audience to please clap for you. Let me give you a tip. As a pro talker myself, if the audience isn't laughing or clapping on their own, it ain't them, it's you. You ain't doing it right. Now, maybe there are exceptions to that rule, For example, if I go in front of a religious crowd in Saudi Arabia, it won't end well for me. And I won't get many claps and I won't get many laughs. But this is a room that's supposed to be already on your side. They came to your event. And you still couldn't get them to clap for you without you begging for it. Oh no. Oh no. But actually, we don't even know if that's the case. If the people showed up because they wanted to show up. Because there was a story the other day from Iowa. He was doing an event in Iowa, and people got up and started screaming, "Hey, we haven't gotten paid for showing up yet." Now, that could have been a hoax. We don't know. For example, we know that Trump, at the beginning of his campaign, he literally hired people to show up. He did. I mean, that's a fact at this point. We even know the agency. I forget the agency's name, but he went through the agency. And they gave people signs and fucking hats and shit when they came in. He lied and said there were hundreds of people there. There were like dozens of people there. So we know Trump did it. In this case, do we know if Jeb did it? No. But there are some people claiming it. And is it plausible given the fact that he has like -8 supporters right now? Yeah, yeah. In fact, Jimmy Dore of TYT, he recently was in Iowa. And he was at Bernie Sanders' headquarters. And then one day he went to Jeb Bush's headquarters. He said there were like fucking tumbleweeds going by, just, and then he goes in and then he's like, "Hey, I'm here from TYT. I'm with the press. Is there any way I can talk to anybody?" They're like, "Get out." Nobody was there. Nobody cared. Nobody cared. It's Jeb Bush. But I actually have the video of the "Please clap for you." Check this out.
I think the next president needs to be a lot quieter, but send a signal that we're prepared to act in the national security interests of this country to get back in the business of creating a more peaceful world. Please clap.
No, Jeb, that's it. You gotta go. You can't do that. It's better to just bite the bullet of the silence. Then say please clap, and then you make it a news story, and everybody mocks you, and then everybody realizes, dude, you're just coasting off your own name recognition. I mean, it really is that sad at this point. In the last debate, there was a point where he said, "You know, you can buy my book on immigration. It costs $2.99 on Amazon. I can assure you, it wasn't a bestseller. Everybody can afford it." Who says that? Who the fuck says that, man? Now compare that to Donald Trump. Even when Donald Trump has nobody supporting him on different policies, he finds a way to flip it back on the audience and say, like, no, I'm popular even though I may objectively not be popular on this. I'm going to make you think that you should be with me and I'm going to blame you. Jeb is just like, can somebody please like me? Please clap for me. That's not how you do it. He reminds me of the boyfriend who gets broken up with. And then immediately after, he's like, can you just tell me what I did wrong? Dude, you're doing it right now. Right now. Okay. All right, let's go to Rand Paul, end on a different note here before we take our first break. Rand Paul has officially dropped out of the Republican presidential race. He finished fifth in Iowa, so he's now going to focus on his reelection for the Senate in Kentucky. And actually, just before I came on here, Rick Santorum also dropped out. Rick Santorum spent a lot of time in Iowa, too, and he won Iowa a few elections ago, and he still ended up having to drop out now. In fact, I don't know why he didn't drop out earlier. He was polling so freaking low. But for Rand Paul, I actually have a weird takeaway from him dropping out. If I were him, I wouldn't be too upset by his failed presidential run. Because number one, he started out the campaign trying something new and trying to distance himself from his father, and he was not being himself in doing that. And I think that hurt him big time. You know, it's like he saw the alleged mistakes of his father about how his father didn't win because he was a very down-the-line, pure libertarian. And I think he said to himself, Just don't do that. Be like less libertarian. Be 50%, 60%, maybe 70% standard Republican douche, and then the rest libertarian. And then you're walking that fine line, and you're striking the right balance where, you know, you can do well. And then towards the end of the campaign, when you realize that he wasn't catching on and he was polling really, really low and he didn't do anything impressive in the first few debates, I think he said to himself, fuck this, I'm done trying to be a character and listening to the strategists and distancing myself from my dad. I'm going to double down on the libertarian angle and be much more libertarian-ish. Still not as much as his dad, but more. And I think what he did is he showed his true colors more. In fact, to the point where in Iowa, I believe the day before, he actually had his dad come campaign for him, which it looked like he was trying to distance himself from his dad the entire time, and then he finally gave up and was like, okay, my dad was more popular than me. Let me bring him in here and let, you know, have him campaign and see what happens. And when he started being himself, he started to see more results. He rose in the polls a little bit. And also, he, according to the Time Snap poll, he won the last debate. He won it. Now, they said, actually, people voted for Trump even though he wasn't there because they left that option. But he came in second behind Trump. So what that tells you is, and this leads to my second point here, whether or not he realizes it right now and whether or not it feels like it and whether or not other analysts will acknowledge this, his flavor of Republicanism is the future of the Republican Party. And I don't just say that because it's my opinion. I say that based on polling data. So when you look at millennial Republicans, they're actually a majority in favor of gay marriage now. They're also a majority in favor of legalizing marijuana now. And you go down the line, and they're much more moderate and or liberal on social issues, which means they're much more libertarian-leaning. And this old variety, you know, the Ted Cruz, Rick Santorum, Mike Huckabee, super evangelical wing, they're in their last throes. Now, I know it's weird to say that now because Ted Cruz just won the Iowa caucus, so it appears like it's the opposite. But their support comes from a very, very old dying breed of Republican and just a dying breed in the country, period. When you look at national polling data, for example, on religiosity in the U.S., it's plummeting, man. It's dropping really fast to the point where now anywhere from 20 to 23% of the U.S. population is unaffiliated. They want nothing to do with organized religion, and that number is continuing to grow. Atheists are a smaller number, but they're continuing to grow as well. And it's unsustainable. If you want to latch on to that old model of being super religious and appealing to, let's face it, only white people, TikTok, son, your time's running out. They're going to have to just keep cheating in order to hold on to power if they want to keep pushing that ideology and that philosophy. They're going to have to continue to gerrymander. They're going to have to continue to rig things. But eventually the dam's going to break, and then you're going to have people who are the Rand Paul variety or flavor of Republican that are the only people left standing. So what I would say to Rand Paul is, you know, the demise of your campaign, it is a little bit too early, okay? So maybe no matter what, even if you ran the perfect campaign with a more libertarian message, you wouldn't have won. You wouldn't have overcome the year of the Trump, okay? But that doesn't mean that it will stay like this. You came in at the wrong time by a little bit. Maybe in 8 more years, you're exactly what they want. Maybe it takes, whatever, 15, 16 years before you're the dominant one in the Republican Party, or that ideology is the dominant one. But I would rest assured on that, and I would also rest assured that had you been more libertarian from day one, then I actually think you would have done better. Now, again, that doesn't mean you would have won, and that doesn't mean you would have had enough to overcome the other people, where it just seems like it's their time now, but to use those arguments, libertarian arguments, you're going to start convincing more people too. So it's not just that you're also appealing to millennials more now and that's the future. It's also that, you know, if you make those arguments and you're proactive in that sense, you're also going to convince more people. And then you're going to build that libertarian coalition. And then that also has a fantastic upside for progressives as well, because that means that there can be working across the aisle, just like used to happen between Alan Grayson and Ron Paul, when they would work on criminal justice stuff and audit the Fed and all these different things where we can, you know, agree. So it's actually kind of upsetting to see him go, because at least on some issues, he made sense on a stage with a bunch of idiots. On foreign policy, on criminal justice stuff, on the drug war, he was willing to say some things later on in his campaign on stage that weren't going to appeal to particularly the base audience in Iowa, where one of the debates was, and the other red states they were. But, you know, credit to him for doing that, and this kind of flavor of Republican is the future of the party, whether or not others want to acknowledge it. Okay. Let's take a break. When we come back, I got a bunch of great stuff, including do the American people favor redistribution of wealth when it's put to them bluntly, yes or no? And then later on in the show, Jimmy Kimmel does a hilarious segment where Jesus makes some of the arguments that today's Republican candidates have been making. How funny. All right, stay right there, guys.
Blows like a 12-gauge shot. Feel me? And God said he's descended from one begotten son to lead the wild into the ways of men. Follow me. Keep my flesh, flesh of my flesh. Come with me. Hail Mary, run quick, see. What do we have in hell? I ain't a killer, but don't push me. Revenge is like the sweetest joy next to getting pussy. Picture paragraphs unloaded, wise words being quoted. Beat the weakness in the rap game and sold it. Bow down, pray to God, hoping that it's listening. Seeing niggas coming for me, my diamonds when they glisten. Now pay attention, bless me, be father. I'm a ghost, and the shedding feels Hail Mary. If I go, they'll go deep inside the solitary mind of a madman. Squeeze in the dark, evil lurks, enemies, see me please. Activate my hate, let it break till the flame is set to empty out my clip. Never stop to aim. Some say the game is all corrupted, fucked in this shit. Stuck, niggas are stuffy if we dust out this shit. Blood up, mama told me never stop until I bust a nut. Fuck the world and they can't just. It's just as well. Hail Mary, come with me. Hail Mary, nigga, run quick, see. What do we have in hell? On the ride or die. La da 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 da. Come with me. Hail Mary, nigga, run quick, see. What do we have in hell? On the ride or die. La da 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 da. Penitentiaries is back with promise making. Never realized the precious time that bitch niggas is wasting. Institutionalized, I live my life a product made to crumble. But too hard and forced math, way too crazy to be humble. We ballin', catch me, father, please. Cause I'm ballin' in the liquor store. That's the Hennessy out here callin'. Can I get some more? Hell, till I reach hell, I ain't scared. Mama checkin' in my bedroom, I ain't there. I got a head with no screws in it. What can I do? One life to live, but I got nothing to lose. Just me and you on a one-way trip to prison. Selling drugs, we all wrapped up in this living. Like a thug to my homeboys and click back. Who would they be? Great tail to this real shit. And feel this when they turn out the lights. I'll be there in the dark. Son of eternal through my heart. Now Hail Mary, nigga, come with me. Hail Mary, nigga, run quick, see. What do we have here now? Do you want to ride or die? La da 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 da.
They got an APB out on my thug family. Since outlaws run these streets like these scandalous freaks. Our enemies dying now, walking around head big, head down. K blasted off the hand and see it's tronic, mixed it. Now I'm twisted, blistered, and hard. Business of me, thugs living, getting me by forever live. And I multiply, survive by thugs. When I die, they won't cry unless they coming with slugs. peep the whole scene and whatever's going on around me. Brain kinda cloudy, smoked out, feeling rowdy, ready to wet the party up. And whoever in that motherfucker, nasty new street slugger, my heat, deep suckers on the regular, mashing in a stolen black act, integra, cock back, sticky checkers to the jaw, that's when I'm dead in your feet first. You got a nice gap, but my heat worse from a thug preaching church. I gave you love, now you eating dirt, needing work. And I ain't the nigga to put you on, cause word is born. When I was broke, I had to hustle till dawn. That's when the sun came up. It's only one way up, hold your head, stay up. So all my niggas, get your pay and wait up. If it's on, then it's on. We break, we break, outlaws on the paper chase. Can you relate to this shit? I don't copy the shit I gotta take. Dealing with fate, but with God, no more today. If it's on, then it's on. We break, we break, outlaws on the paper chase. Can you relate to this shit? I don't copy the shit I gotta take. Dealing with fate, but with God, no more today.
All right, welcome back, guys.
Actually, I'm not sure if I want to do the Bernie one first. Well, I guess it's related to Bernie a little bit here, but the next one is the real big Bernie one. Bernie Sanders has been getting endless amounts of shit from the establishment media for calling for a political revolution, as he calls it. But it turns out that when you poll the American people, they like that idea. They like it a lot. So Vox has some new research here, and they found the following, quote, 54% of respondents agreed that a political revolution might be necessary to redistribute money from the wealthiest Americans to the middle class. Just 30% said they disagreed. Okay, this is huge, and this is an argument that I've been making for years now. In fact, we have old segments where I brought this up, where I always thought, I don't know why the Republicans are so confident in their ridiculous assertion that, oh, redistribution of wealth is so bad. We got you. We got a Democrat saying you like redistribution. Ha ha, stupid. Everybody's against you. No, you made that up. That's not true at all. First of all, everybody's in favor of one level or another of so-called redistribution of wealth. Even if you're almost a 100% pure libertarian or anarcho-capitalist, a lot of those people still say, for example, well, we do need cops and we do need a court system, but that's it. Draw the line there. Okay, well, what the fuck do you have to do to set that up? Unless you're going to make it voluntary, in which case the rich would pay for it and then those systems would be biased in their favor and there wouldn't be justice would not be blind at all. But you have to have taxes to pay for that. So that is redistribution of wealth. The military, redistribution of wealth. That's a socialist institution, okay? You go down the list, infrastructure spending, Social Security, Medicare. This is all redistribution of wealth. So everybody's in favor of it to one extent or another. And furthermore, if people knew the facts about the way our economy works and the world economy and the distribution that we currently have, I think that literally 100% of people would be in favor of redistribution of wealth because, as we learned from a recent report from Oxfam, the richest 62 people in the world have more wealth than the bottom 3.7 billion. 62 people have more than 50% of the human beings on this planet. That just makes no sense, okay? They didn't just – it's not like, hey, man – they just worked really, really hard, like that much harder than everybody else in the world or than 50% of people on the planet. No, that's not true. It's not a meritocracy. If you believe that that's a meritocracy, you might be a stupid person. You might be an idiot. It's not like they just worked harder. So when people know that, they go, well, yeah, where's the debate? Of course I want some level of redistribution of wealth. If it comes down to, hey, should this CEO who makes $72 million a year, be able to buy a third yacht and a second Maserati and a third mansion, or should we take some of that money in the form of taxes and give health care to poor orphans who had crack mothers that don't take care of them? What's the right choice there? Just curious. What would you rather do? Health care for the poor orphans? Or let that guy get whatever the fuck I said, a third yacht, a second mansion, and another Maserati? Which makes more sense. No, everybody's in favor of redistribution. It's just to what extent. Now, when you get into the details of this poll, it's devastating. It's devastating to the entire right-wing narrative and ideology and philosophy. Let's take a look at it here. So overall, 54%, like I said, are in favor, 30% against. This is specifically for a political revolution for redistribution of wealth. Independents, 51% are in favor. We have people who didn't vote in 2012, 58% are in favor. We have Tea Party supporters, 55% are in favor. The only single group in the country that's against a political revolution for redistribution, seniors. That's it. Everybody else, every other group is like, yeah, that sounds like an awesome idea. Guys, Tea Party voters are like, yeah, redistribution. Rock on. 55% say rock on. No, that's it, man. And look, this gets to something that I've been saying for a long time now, which is Bernie Sanders is not the radical. His detractors are the radicals. And we're going to get to this in a little bit, too, but on virtually every single policy position he has, the American people are overwhelmingly on his side. You know what that makes him? By definition? Mainstream. It makes him centrist. It makes him moderate. That's what it makes him. So you have, you know, people like Hillary Clinton, and then you have Republicans also bashing, oh, my radical, this far left. No, he's only far left in the context of establishment Washington politics, which are already super far right. So if he's on the far left of a spectrum that is far right, that would make him, like I've been saying all along, and even his strongest idea and call for reform, where he says, a political revolution, and they specify in Vox here, redistribution of wealth from the rich to the middle class and the poor. Even that, everybody's like, yeah, no, totally, I'm with that guy. So spare me, Hillary, because Hillary, you know, parroting stuff like this. You voted for the Iraq War. You voted for the Patriot Act, which rips up the Constitution and ignores the Fourth Amendment and ignores due process and habeas corpus. You were in favor of intervention in Libya. You're now in favor of a no-fly zone in Syria, which means boots on the ground in Syria and more intervention in Syria, which could escalate to World War III with Russia. Bernie ain't the radical. You're the radical. Based on policies, he has the people with him. You don't. Even the stuff where the establishment talking heads have said repeatedly, oh, political revolution, pie-in-the-sky liberal stuff. This isn't what the American people want. Look at the numbers, bitch. They do want it. And not only do they want it in what you would say is its most extreme form, namely to redistribute wealth. I told you all along, whenever Republicans charge Democrats with, yeah, radical wants to redistribute wealth, the correct answer is, no, you're the radical, and yes, I do want to redistribute wealth. You don't? Tell the American people why you disagree with them. Okay, now, I'm not done. Let me elaborate on this one. We'll do it in a separate segment here, but this is also just as important and very related. Now, I've been telling you guys from day one that Bernie Sanders is actually as mainstream as it gets, because he represents what the American people want on virtually every issue. Now, I'm sure there's one or two that we can stumble across and say, well, on that one, he's not with the majority. But on the overwhelming majority of the issues, he has the overwhelming majority of the American people on his side. Now, that's not my opinion. That's a fact. We're going to get to that in a second. But let's also note here that the establishment media would laugh off this analysis. In fact, they already have laughed off this analysis because how do they describe Bernie? The super far left socialist. He's so far left we could barely see him. But again, what that analysis misses is that he's only super far left in the context of Washington establishment politics, which is a spectrum that's super far right. So if he's on the super far left of a spectrum that's super far right, that makes him centrist. That makes him mainstream. And in fact, like I just said, when you go issue for issue, when you look at the polling data, the American people are like, yeah, I like that guy. That guy's the most moderate. That guy's the most centrist. That guy's the most representative of what my views are. So previously, what we pointed to as evidence, or at least what I would point to is an amalgamation of a bunch of different polls, whether we talk about Pew Research or Gallup or public policy polling or any of a number of them, where you say, okay, on that one, the American people are with him on immigration. On that one, the American people are with Bernie on climate change and how to fix it. On this one, they're with him with his anti-war stance. On this one, they're with him with taxing the rich. On this one, they're with him with not cutting Social Security. But now, what Vox did is they said, instead of like looking at separate polls to come to this conclusion, we're going to ask people directly, hey, do you support policy X, Y, and Z? And by the way, these are all things that Bernie Sanders has pushed for. Let's take a look at the results. Bernie Sanders called to raise taxes on the wealthy. 73% of the American people say, yes, please. They strongly or somewhat support that. 73%. Raising taxes on big corporations. 66% say, yes, please. How about single-payer health care? Oh, this one, Hillary says, oh, come on. This is not something people are with you on. We just got to add to Obamacare. What are you, crazy? 55% say, yes, I'm with Bernie. How about free college? Another one. Oh, my God, that's so far left. I don't know about that. Maybe we do little tweaks. We don't go all the way. 59% say, yes, free college. I believe Bernie Sanders has a message for all of the naysaying pundits, for Hillary Clinton, and for all the Republicans. Tell me how my ass tastes. But he's been right all along. Like, I'm happy that people are finally getting to the point where they're actually testing these things with that in mind. Again, previously you'd have to look at disparate polls to come to the conclusion, which I've been telling you about all along. I'm happy people are finally doing it. But, dude, this is what he's been saying all along. It's not like, you know, he's advocating for things that are unpopular, and he knows they're unpopular, and he's fighting an uphill battle. On the contrary, he's only fighting an uphill battle in the context of Washington. In the eyes of the American people, why do you think there's a gigantic populist grassroots support movement for him? Because he's saying the shit that other people have already agreed with all along. And this story is so important because it shows you how big of a disconnect there is between the corporations, the elitists, the powers that be, the establishment, Washington, New York, and the rest of the people in the country. When you look at the systems that have been set up, for example, in certain places in Europe, I get messages from these people all the time on Twitter and elsewhere where they're like, yeah, no, you guys are crazy, and that guy Bernie is just like a run-of-the-mill, standard, like nothing politician there. If you talk about Sweden or Denmark or somewhere like that. It's like, yeah, free college, this isn't something we debate. We just have it because it makes sense. But yeah, free health care. What are you going to do? Somebody needs spleen surgery and you're going to let them go bankrupt? Well, in America, we say, yeah, no, we are going to let them go bankrupt. And then we have idiot politicians who dare to call you radical if you say, perhaps maybe that person shouldn't go bankrupt for their spleen surgery. But just throwing it out there, radical, radical communist, pinko, crazy, crazy left wing, super far left, the American people are against this. Except, whoops, they're not against it. They're totally for it. Bernie Sanders is not the radical. His detractors are the radicals. All right. Now we move on to the religion block of the show, which lasts pretty much the rest of the show. I got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 stories that in one way or another involve religion. Oh, goodness. What have we gotten ourselves into here? All right, first let's go to Jimmy Kimmel. Random, I know, but we've done stories with Kimmel before. Every once in a while, he does one of his funny segments where he just fucking knocks it out of the park. Jimmy Kimmel did a hilarious segment where he took the words of the Republican presidential candidates and put them in the mouth of Jesus. This is awesome.
So we thought it would be interesting to take real quotes from the primary candidates. These are things these guys actually said, and we want to get an idea of what they would sound like from the mouth of Jesus. So here they are. The words of the candidates as read by Jesus himself.
You don't lock your doors because you hate the people on the outside. You lock your doors because you love the people on the inside. The fact is that we need appropriate vetting, and I don't think that orphans under 5 should be admitted into the United States at this point. You don't stop bad guys by taking away our guns. You stop bad guys by using our guns. Look at that face. I mean, would anybody vote for that? I would bomb the out of them. I would just bomb those suckers. The other thing is, with the terrorists, you have to take out their families. I'll take the votes of everyone who likes machine guns and bacon. I will build a wall. It will be a great wall.
Yeah, I love that. I loved every second of it. Those are all real quotes. Some of them were Trump, some of them were Chris Christie, some of them were Ted Cruz, I think some of them were Rubio. They're such hypocrites, man. Now, don't get me wrong. Is it possible to back up a message of hatred and intolerance and bigotry and violence through the Bible? Absolutely. It's fucking child's play. You could easily do it. Plenty of quotes in the Old Testament and even some of the New Testament. Yeah, totally. So it's not that, you know, there's no backing for that. There absolutely is backing for that. But these guys, usually what they do is they specifically profess their undying love for Jesus, as Marco Rubio has done just this past week, and Ted Cruz did in his thank you speech in Iowa. And then they go on to bring up all these horrific policies which are against his message. Now, if these guys came out and quoted Bible verses that are the hateful Bible verses, then you have to say, okay, well, they do have scriptural backing. And there is scriptural backing for a lot of shitty things like being anti-gay, for example. But they don't even give the quotes that back up that stuff. They praise Jesus, and then they give the bad stuff. So that doesn't make sense. I mean, we've gone over it before, but on issues of war, on issues of profiling and immigration and economics and guns, there are no two sides to those, okay? So when it comes to Jesus' message on war, pacifism. Pacifism. So, hey, you hit me on one cheek, here's the other one. Turn the other cheek, hit that one too. That means that it's not even like he's a non-interventionist, which is don't fight except in cases of self-defense. He's like, no, if you attack, I'm still going to just sit here. And to not even return fire and return, you know, with violence and stuff, that's the morally superior position. Nothing I've ever heard any Republican ever advocate for in the modern context. When it comes to immigration and refugees, are you kidding me? This dude was like, he would have been an open borders anarchist. Let everybody in. I feed the sick, the downtrodden, the hungry. Would Jesus ever say something like Ben Carson said the other night? Like, you know, if you're inviting 10 people over to your house and one of them might be a terrorist, you keep them all out. No, Jesus would still invite them over and feed them and wash their feet. He would do all types of stuff like that. And helping the poor, the same party that says cut food stamps, cut welfare, cut every social safety net program that helps people and keeps them out of poverty. They're the same people who turn around and go, Jesus is so great. Well, then why are you cutting the programs that he would support more than any other programs? No, they're ridiculous human beings, and they use it to exploit the message of Jesus, or they exploit Christianity for their own political purposes. very much in the same way like we talk about ISIS. They exploit Islam for their own particular purposes. So they'll cherry pick just like anybody else. They'll say, hey, no, I get sex slaves because, look, it's in my holy text. But then, wait a second, it also says that you can't do any intoxicants, and you guys are popping amphetamine pills, Captagon pills, like there's no tomorrow. So why are you, what are you doing here? Why are you cherry picking like a motherfucker? Because that's what they do, okay? This is what it all comes down to. The conservative douchey message comes above all else, and the praising and lip service to the religion comes second. Okay, now, we go to Evangelist Franklin Graham for some more ignorance, deep, deep ignorance. Evangelist Franklin Graham went on CNN and just gave us a waterfall of falsehoods. Let's watch.
There's some good guys out there that have some great ideas for this country to move this country forward, but those good ideas aren't going to go anywhere without the hand of Almighty God. And yes, I do believe in the divine hand. I believe that God has blessed this nation, that his hand has been on this nation, but we have taken God out of our country. We've taken him out of politics, we've taken him out of schools, out of the education system, and we are a broken nation. And it's not going to get fixed by politics. It's only going to be fixed, I believe, with the American people turn from their sins and put their faith and trust in Almighty God. That's the only hope that I believe. So I'm going to cap all the capital steps. Next week I'll be in South Carolina. I'll be in Georgia. I've already been up in New Hampshire. I've already been to Iowa. We're going to get ahead of the primaries where we can to encourage Christians to pray, and I want to encourage the evangelicals to get out and vote. Their voice needs to be heard. About 20 to 30 million evangelicals stayed home during the last election. I'm trying to get them out and get them to vote, and according to CNN, the largest group of evangelicals voted in New Hampshire in the last two elections, so I'm glad for that.
And the question becomes, well, to vote on what basis? Is it enough to just vote for the person who seems to talk about their faith the most, Christian faith specifically, or, you know, like your own organization? Is it about what they actually do? Needs for the poor, the sick, suffering people. Is it enough just to believe in God, or is it how you live that belief that you want evangelicals to look at?
No, and I appreciate you asking that question, Chris. That's a great question. There's a lot of people who talk about their faith, but you have to live it. And I'm wanting every voter to examine the person they're going to vote for and how that person lives their faith. But and do they stand for biblical principles? I believe the Bible is the Word of God from cover to cover, and I believe every word of it is true. And I hope and pray that people will vote for candidates that live the Word of God.
So, Reverend, if a candidate says, look, I have my own Christian beliefs, but this is a secular society under our Constitution, and let's look at same-sex marriage. The Supreme Court has said what the law of the land is, respecting the equal protection of same-sex couples to get married, and I must support the law. Would I get your vote?
Well, first of all, Chris, you talk about us being a secular government, a secular society. That's only taken place in the last few years. Our nation was founded on biblical principles. Our founding fathers recognized God. All you have to do is go through Washington and look at all of our monuments with the inscriptions and references to Almighty God.
No, how about you go to the founding fathers' literal quotes and go to the supreme law of the land, the Constitution? Let's look at what some of them said. Thomas Jefferson said, quote, Christianity is the most perverted system that ever shone on man. More from Thomas Jefferson. There's not one redeeming feature in our superstition of Christianity. It has made one half the world fools and the other half hypocrites. Okay, that's so strong, I don't even agree with it. Tell me again how all the biblical principles, Christianity, that's what it's all about. All right, Ben Franklin, quote, lighthouses are more useful than churches. Another one, the way to see by faith is to shut the eye of reason. Now we go to John Adams. This would be the best of all possible worlds if there were no religion in it. And finally, Thomas Paine, of all the tyrannies that affect mankind, tyranny in religion is the worst. No, we are not a Christian nation. If the founding fathers wanted to make us a Christian nation, you know what they could have done? They could have put that in the Constitution. They could have put it right there. They could have said, hey, by the way, we're a Christian nation. But how many times does the Constitution reference Christianity? Zero. The Bible? Zero. Jesus? Zero. God? Zero. The only time it even mentions religion is to say, you shall not establish a religion, which means we are a secular state. And that's only in the first sentence of the First Amendment. So I know you didn't read it, because if you got to the first part, you would have said, fuck, I'm wrong. They got me. They got me. Hey, look at the Founding Fathers' quotes. They got me. I guess, look, they're very clear. They're not super rah-rah pro-Christianity here. So understand something, guys. People like him, it's just sheer ignorance. They argue based off of what they want to be true as opposed to what is true. And they're demonstrating it here for you right now. All right, now I want to go ahead and dig a little deeper here because there are some other hilarious things he said. So he's like, live your faith. See, this is what it comes down to. It's not just about saying you're Christian. You got to live your faith. You got to act on it. That's what you have to do. Interesting. So I take it that you've come out and you've taken a bold stand in favor of accepting Syrian refugees, right? Oops, you didn't do it. In fact, you took the opposite stance. Well, Jesus is perfectly clear. The Bible is perfectly clear on this one. You have to treat the sojourner, so the immigrant, the refugee in your land, like it's your neighbor. You have to house them and clothe them and feed them. You forgot that part, didn't you? And also say you won't say live your faith, so you're in favor of, for example, anti-poverty programs, because Jesus loved helping the rich. That's what he's all about. So you're in favor of welfare and food stamps and other social safety net programs. You know, WIC, for example, that gives nutritional food and milk to single mothers. You're in favor of all that, right? No, you're not. You want to cut it. So what you do is you cherry pick the fuck out of your holy book. Only the parts that are convenient for your political ideology do you act on. And the saddest thing is that even though that's the case, you still say, I believe every word of the Bible is true from cover to cover. Dude, that's not even possible. Why? The Bible, like the Quran and like other holy books, it is totally contradictory. Totally contradictory. There are good parts of it that call for peace and happiness. There are bad parts of it that call for slavery and genocide and war. And then there are flat-out unscientific, factually false claims. Like, for example, in the Bible, they allude to the four corners of the earth. Well, what kind of an earth would have four corners? That's right, a flat earth. You know, that's one that you just can't really, believe that. But he says, hey, I believe it all. I believe it all. So I guess you're a flat earther. I guess you think the earth is flat. I also guess you think, since if you count up the Bible stories and go back, it means the earth is only about 6,000 years old. I guess you think the earth is 6,000 years old, even though scientists have found out through radiocarbon dating and other methods that it's about 4.54 billion years old. Dude, I can keep owning your punk-ass arguments all day and night here. What you believe makes absolutely no sense. The world did not flood. There was no Noah. Moses didn't even fucking exist. He didn't even exist. There was no talking snake. There was no burning bush. There was no seven-headed dragon. And you don't even abide by all the stuff that's in there, and you say you believe it cover to cover. Dude, where's your beard? It's an abomination to shave in the eyes of God. I guess you got to put yourself to death, bro. You say you believe every word of it. I didn't say it. You said it. You said it. You said it. You shaved. You cut your hair. You're not allowed to do that. Did you read the whole thing? Do you even know what the fuck it says? Do you guys know that in Catholicism specifically, on Christmas Eve, they have this tradition of eating fish? There's only one problem with that. In the Bible, it bans all shellfish. So if you're Catholic and you're eating lobster and you're eating, you know, crab or whatever on Christmas Eve, as many do, you're violating what's in the fucking Bible. What are you doing? What are you doing? Have you ever had body piercings or tattoos? That's also something you can't do. If you look at the Bible, a lot of people don't know this, but women are supposed to cover their hair in the Bible. So I love how people look at Islam. They're like, ah, ha, ha, backwards, maybe women cover up. It actually says it in the Bible, too. You guys just ignore it. So do you believe it or do you not believe it? Is your wife covered up? That bitch better cover up if she hasn't yet. You say you believe the Bible. I'm trying to help you out because I'm telling you what's actually in the fucking thing. She has to sleep outside in a tent when she's on her period. Did you know that one? You bet you didn't know that one. Did you know that they talk about, being anti-gay marriage is biblically correct. You know what else is biblically correct? Polygamy. I guess you're against one man, one woman, right? Because biblical marriage is polygamy. There's parts of the Bible where young girls drug their father and then rape him. Biblical value. Selling your daughter off into sex slavery. That's in the Bible. You in favor of that? There's abortion in the Bible. God performs abortions. Rips the fetuses out of the stomachs of the girls, the women in Samaria. That's God performing abortions. It says if your wife cheats on you, she should drink bitter water and have an abortion in the Bible. It says if your wife cheats on you, abortion is the solution in the Bible. You're pro-abortion, right? No. You don't know dick about dick, even your own religion. It's pathetic. All right, I went way over time there. I got carried away. Let's take a break. When we come back, we got an interesting survey from Pew Research on Islam and Muslims and how Americans feel about it. It's really interesting. I can't wait to get into that one. And hopefully we have time for the Saudi man who is in trouble for fucking a vacuum cleaner. Oh, no. Oh, no. All right, stay right there, guys. We'll be right back. All right, we're back, guys. Time to give you more stuff. Pew Research came out with an interesting new survey on Muslims and Islam, particularly in America. They asked Americans certain questions in terms of what they think about Islam and Muslims. So let me go ahead and show the first chart here, and we'll dive into it. This says Republicans and Democrats disagree on how the next president should talk about Islamic extremists. In total, you have 50% that say be careful not to criticize Islam as a whole, and then you have 40% that say speak bluntly, even if critical of Islam as a whole. And then naturally, when you dive into the party breakdown, you see that Republicans, 65% of Republicans come out on the side of, hey, speak bluntly, even if you're critical of Islam as a whole. 70% of conservatives, self-described conservatives, say that as well. You have 58% of moderate liberals, so it says moderate slash liberal, that say speak bluntly, even if critical of Islam as a whole. And then when you get to the Democratic side, it's a little bit different. So you have 70% of Democrats slash lean Democrat that say be careful not to criticize Islam as a whole. You have conservative slash moderates, which is weird because this one seems out of place here, but 64% of them say be careful not to criticize Islam as a whole. And then among self-described liberals, you have 80% of them saying don't criticize Islam as a whole. So my takeaway from this one is actually I'm a little bit confused, and I think they worded it a little bit weirdly. So in my view, I think you should be really careful not to criticize Muslims as a whole, because Muslims are human beings, they're people, and they're obviously not all guilty of terrorism, and they're not all fundamentalists or literalists or Salafi Muslims or Wahhabi Muslims. It would be crazy to think that. So, yeah, I would say be careful not to generalize about Muslims. But if you say Islam, which is what they say in the poll, they say be careful not to criticize Islam as a whole. No, that I actually disagree with, because Islam is an ideology, just like Christianity is an ideology, just like Buddhism is an ideology, just like when you get to, you know, political definitions. Fascism is an ideology, you know, and you can go down the line here, communism. Now, no doctrine is sacred in terms of it's above criticism. So when you say don't criticize Islam as a whole, well, wait a second, what if I disagree with Islam? What if I disagree with it as a whole? Look, I'm not a member of the Islamic faith. So, yeah, I'm going to disagree with it as a whole because I don't think it's true. I don't think it's accurate. In the same way I don't think fucking Hinduism is accurate. That's not a sign of bigotry. That's a sign of accuracy. Saying, hey, look, I don't think that's factual. Sorry, I don't want to be part of your club. So the way they word it, you know, it's like they're both right, because I think the implication that they were getting out there was Muslim and not Islam, or Muslims and not Islam. So if we reword it here, I'll tell you what my breakdown is. Would I be careful not to criticize Muslims as a whole? Yes, because if you generalize about Muslims and assume they all think the same thing, that is indeed bigotry, okay? But should you be walk on eggshells and not speak bluntly your opinions on Islam, the ideology? No, that I think you should criticize, just like you should criticize all ideologies, and you shouldn't give special exemptions to certain ones. That just doesn't make sense. All right, now, let's move on to the next one here. They say, Republicans more likely than Democrats to say some religions' teachings promote violence. So it says, teachings of some religions promote violence. Republicans and lean Republicans, 32% say yeah there. For Democrats, only 15% say yeah there. So it's a majority on both sides for Republicans and Democrats that say that some violent people use religion to justify violent actions. So 57% of Republicans say that, and 77% of Democrats say that. Now, on this one, I actually think both are right. Both sides of this are right. So are there flat-out violent teachings in some religions? Yeah. Can you find violent passages in the Quran and in the Bible? Yeah, absolutely. To disagree with that is just you're disagreeing with some of the words written on some of the pages. So that's true. But then it's also true, I think, that there are also some people who are violent people who use that as a sort of intellectual cover for doing violence. So I think it's a mix. And this is why I think, for example, in the whole new atheist versus progressive debate that's going on online, you have a breakdown in communication because both sides have a camp. So on the progressive side, they're more likely to say, no, no, it's just that violent people use religion to justify violent actions that they would do whether or not they were part of a religion. That's like the progressive position. And then the new atheist position is more along the lines of, well, no, no, what if the actual cause for the violence is because they're reading the holy book, they interpret it literally, and then they're acting based off that being true. So if they see something that says, whether it's in the Hadith or the Quran or whatever, that says, apostates, not so hot on them, might have to kill them, well, then they act on that. So the problem is the violent teachings in the religion. And this is why I've said from day one I'm kind of in the middle of this debate, because I think both things are right. It depends on it's a case-by-case thing. Sometimes there are some people who would do violence either way, and they're just using their religion as a cover, and they might not necessarily believe every word of the doctrine, but they do the violence anyway. And if there was no religion, they find another excuse to do the violence. That exists in some people. But then in other people, it's also true that there are fundamentalists and there are literalists in Christianity, Islam, and a bunch of religions where they read the violent passages and they actually believe, because they've been sufficiently brainwashed, they believe, no, no, I am going to do violence in the name of this because I think it's true and it's telling me to do the violence. So on this one, you know, I think the breakdown is interesting because most Americans, even Republicans, say, no, the problem isn't the religious doctrine. It's violent people exploiting the religious doctrine, and in overwhelming numbers, the American people are in that camp. For this one, I think it's actually they're both right, which is why, again, if I was asked to answer this, the questions in this poll, I wouldn't even be able to do it because I think the answers require much more nuance than how they pose them here. But just to break it down for you guys one more time, we have 50%. Of people say, be careful not to criticize Islam as a whole. 40% say, speak bluntly, even if critical of Islam as a whole. And then you have 57% of Republicans that say, some violent people use religion to justify violent actions, and 77% of Democrats say that. I think this is an interesting topic, and I don't think we're ever going to come to a solid answer that satisfies everybody in it, so we'll continue to shout over each other's heads. But I think there's a reason why there's so much fighting going on around this, because the answer is messy, and it is a case-by-case thing, and you have to look at each individual case in history to determine what the real motivation is for said violent action. Okay. All right, now we go to one where I don't think it's close. I think it's the literalist interpretation of the religion that was the problem in this one. Last week, Boko Haram terrorists attacked a village in northeastern Nigeria, and 86 people were killed. The International Business Times reports on this. The attack, which included shootings, burning, and explosions, continued for 4 hours in a village and two camps nearby housing 25,000 refugees. Three female suicide bombers then detonated among a group of people fleeing to neighboring Gomori village. Apparently about 20,000 people have been killed in the period of 6 years by Boko Haram, while about 2.3 million people have been displaced. And as a result of this, the EU is now giving $54 million to help fight them. And the details of this story are beyond gruesome. I mean, they quite literally burned children alive, and there are some reports where people could hear that going on. Absolute gut-wrenching stuff. Now, for those of you who don't know, Boko Haram is a jihadist group, and their original name meant people committed to the Prophet's teachings for propagation and jihad. Now, their name today means, quote, Western education is forbidden. Haram means forbidden, and some people say it actually means Western influence is sin, or Westernization is sacrilege. And here are some of the quotes from their genius founder, Muhammad Youssef, so you see more where they're coming from here. Quote, like rain, we believe it is a creation of God rather than an evaporation caused by the sun that condenses and becomes rain. Like saying the world is a sphere, if it runs contrary to the teachings of Allah, we reject it. We also reject the theory of Darwinism. Oh, okay. So I see what's happening here. I need you to think about how much this is like an episode of The Twilight Zone. We live in a world, we share a world with the same people who heard the leader of Boko Haram, Muhammad Youssef, and they go, nailed it. That guy got it on lockdown. Their name is Western education is forbidden. Westernization is sacrilege. Okay. No, that's the solution. The solution is Western education, is secular education. Because what we're talking about here is math and science and history and facts and data. But you see, what they're doing here is they're trying to combat up front what they know will defeat them. Can't win on the battlefield of ideas and concepts and competing philosophies. So they have to try to nip it in the bud. No, Western education is the problem. It's the problem with everything. They say that because they know once people are exposed to Western education, or just education, once they learn math and science and learn about space and all these fantastic things and wonderful things and stunning things that exist on this planet, they're going to want more of that. You know, this is like how they say in Christianity, don't eat from the tree of knowledge in the Bible. Why? Because, once you open that door of caring about facts and data and information, it's only a matter of time until you end up leaving us, the theocrats. But that's why that's exactly what the answer is. And how can it be in the year 2016, there are people who believed this idiot, Muhammad Youssef, who's saying, yeah, no, flat earth, man, rock and roll. Evolution is wrong. A flat earth is true. And, oh, yeah, rain only comes from God. It's not because of any scientific process where we know exactly how it works. No, God. People believe that nonsense so much that they literally, in the name of it, kill children, burn children alive. Okay, once you remove this veil of your bullshit ideology, what you're doing is not a moral act. They think they're the most moral. But if your ideology is not true, which it's not, then what you're doing is you're murdering innocent kids. You're net damaging this earth. You are contributing to more pain and suffering on this planet. No, see, that's the thing. We evaluate your actions based on logic and rationality and empathy and real morality and real ethics. And when you do that, you're not net contributing to happiness and joy and pleasure and fruitful life experience. What you're doing is, in the name of fucking Mother Goose, in the name of Pokemon and the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, you're murdering children, and you think it makes you a better person, a more moral person. No, it makes you immoral, and it makes you ignorant, and it makes you stupid. You're killing people because you believe your leader, who is a flat earther, nailed it. Nobody has ever been more wrong and more immoral and more barbaric than these people. And their ideology is bullshit, and we need to expose it. And I'm happy that the EU is giving aid to the people fighting them on the ground in Nigeria. And also, if they wanted it, I would be fine with UN protection for areas that are particularly vulnerable to further attack from Boko Haram. All right, now we go to, I'm actually going to skip ahead. I don't want to do the Michelle Bachmann one yet. A Saudi man was accused of the very serious crime of fucking a vacuum cleaner. Not kidding. This is a real story. So Riyadh Daily reports here. The man was caught in full action by his wife of 17 years before she reported her husband to the authorities. Legal experts say, and I quote, due to the peculiar nature of this case of adultery, in which the accused performed sex with a home appliance and not with an animal or a human being, the judge has decided to give him a lighter sentence than usual for this crime. 2 years in prison and 1,000 lashes is more than acceptable. Okay, I'm going to get back to that in a second, but let me just give you one more here. This is when the police weighed in. They said, we were unable to identify if the suspect performed any sexual act with his vacuum cleaner. Okay, where would the evidence be? Are you literally looking for a cum shot inside of a vacuum? What a sad job that must be. To get to the meat of the story here. Perhaps the wrong term to use right now. Meat. 2 years in prison and 1,000 lashes for fucking a vacuum cleaner, or perhaps masturbation with a vacuum cleaner. Again, we don't even know if it's true. It could just be that the wife made it up. There's no evidence of it. It wouldn't stand up in a court that actually gives a shit about evidence. She could have just made it up because she's mad. She doesn't like him. Whatever. Could be anything. 2 years in prison and 1,000 lashes as a result of this. No, guys, you need to understand something. Saudi Arabia is like, if Pat Robertson did bath salts and he was in a particularly violent mood and he was a dictator, he was a fascist dictator who took over a country and he could implement his crazy ideas. Pat Robertson on bath salts running a country exists right now. It's in Saudi Arabia, the Salafi terror state. A guy who maybe, maybe not was caught with his dick in a vacuum. 2 years and 1,000 lashes. You can imagine Pat Robertson giving out that sentence, right? What was he doing? Oh, he had his pee-pee in a vacuum cleaner. 2 years and 1,000 lashes. Oh, praise be to God. We'd laugh at that fucker here, right? But there, it exists. People are living under constant terror and oppression. No, that's not okay. Guys, fundamentalists are, they're flat out anti-fun and anti-freedom and liberty. You know what I file this under here in America? Hashtag freedom, bitch. Step aside. If I want to shove my dick in a vacuum, I'm going to shove my dick in a vacuum. I mean, they're against this. I mean, are they against masturbation? I would assume so. We had the guy in Utah the other day saying, war on porn. I'm going to wage a war on porn. I want to classify it as a public health hazard. That's what he wants to do. Here, they're actually doing it. They're locking you up if your dick is in a vacuum. No, you can't have that. You can't have that. And by the way, deep down, even people there who say, I believe in this ideology. I'm a deeply religious person. Come on, you know all of them have jerked off. You know all of them have looked at porn. You know all of them have done something at one time or another, drugs, alcohol, whatever, where it doesn't really fit with the oh-so-holy and awesome laws, which are really stupid and not holy at all. So you're all hypocrites. This is why, for example, Utah, one of the most conservative states in the U.S., has the highest rate of watching porn. This is why Pakistan, I think it was, one of the most anti-gay countries on the planet, watches the most gay porn. Here they're like, we're so virtuous. We're so virtuous that you can't even shove your dick in a vacuum cleaner. We're going to lock you up. And then what's going on behind the scenes? They're endless stories of the decadence and the endless lust and sexual fantasies that have been carried out by the Saudi royalty. You violate the same ridiculous laws that you use to oppress your people all the fucking time. The ideology is bullshit, and they even admit in the article. Yeah, I mean, obviously Muhammad said nothing about fucking a vacuum cleaner. Vacuum cleaners didn't even exist. But we're against it anyway because religion and because these are the laws we want to come up with. Fuck that, man. Look, you're a religious person. If you want to abide by a certain code on your own, fine. But should you be able to lock other people up for shit like this? Oh, get the fuck out of here. You're the bad guy. You're the problem. You're the authoritarian. You're the theocrat. You're the fascist here. It's not them. Poor guy's just trying to get a nut. As Descent said, he's looking for a slut with a nice butt to get a nut. Which song was that in? Am I allowed to say slut anymore? I think that's not PC. Can't do that, right? Okay. Enough with fucking vacuum cleaners. The lunatic pastor David Manning is in a little bit of financial trouble, so naturally, who's he going to blame? The gays. Let's watch.
But I see this, as many of the elders have discussed, as just more of an opportunity for us to get more press and to get more coverage to explain our position and so who we are. Right now, the articles are jumping all over the place. I've gotten calls from everybody about this news organization. In fact, can I share this with you? To all the sodomites.
To all the sodomites.
You're going to purchase this church at a foreclosure sale. Let me tell you something. Before you can ever own the Lord's house, because that's what this is.
That's right.
This is the Lord's house. This ain't no damn bath house.
That's right.
This ain't no fag house. This is the Lord's house.
Amen.
And before you can ever own this property, hook or crook to own this property, you will be carried, men who are fags with testicles.
What?
Will be carrying babies in their testicles and giving birth to them through their anus. That's how impossible it is for you to get this house.
That's right.
When you start carrying a baby in your bags,
yes,
and birthing that baby through your ass, then
right,
you can own this house.
Tell
but
when
I see you pull a baby out, yes, your ass, you ain't going to pull this church out from underneath to us. And boom, shakalaka,
yes,
goes right there.
Yes,
and all you fags can go to hell and
right,
do it now. I'm James David Manning, everybody. I'm the Lord's servant.
I can't with this guy. What the fuck was that? What did I just watch? I don't know. All right, I think my favorite part of that is weird because it was actually, he finally brought a yes man in, or actually a yes woman in this case, where her job is to say, oh, yes, Pastor. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. You tell him, Pastor. That's right on. No, nothing he said was even coherent. Where the fuck did that come from? Where did that come from? He's talking about financial troubles he has, where apparently they want to foreclose and take his church or whatever the case is. And he's like, I got it. It's the gays' fault. Unbelievable! That's scapegoating 101. And then he's came up with, see, he had to think about this to say it. You'll only take my church when you get pregnant and you got babies in your testicles and then it comes out your ass. I don't even know what goes on in this dude's head. He had to think about that to say it. He had to think about that concept to say it. This guy is on a whole other level of perversion. And for a guy who's so immensely anti-gay and using all the slurs and all that stuff, your hand motions sure are questionable. You're like, let me tell you about the gays. I serve the Lord. Hey. In fact, he actually admitted what his thoughts are on sexuality. Let's listen to that.
All right, Pastor Manny, you said that Starbucks was putting semen of the sodomites in their coffee. But here's the interesting part. Because it, quote, it flavors up the coffee and it makes you think you're having a good time. Which then makes me wonder, do you equate drinking semen with a good time?
Well, you know, you're pushing me up in a little bit of a corner here now, Jake, because I have to be very cautious here. But let me end my and all precautions that I can exercise here now say that, well, you know, a number of people think that semen tastes good. A number of people think that drinking semen is a good idea. Taste of semen is quite a flavor, and they seek it in the midst of other kinds of activities. And so one would think, well, all right, Starbucks has deduced that, listen, you know, in an ingenious way, I would say, that were more than infamous ingenious way, they've discovered that since people like semen and there's so many people drinking it from one another, their body fluids, why not put it in our coffees and flavor up our coffees?
So, Pastor Manny, you're getting sense for overall from your descriptions here that you think that being gay is a lifestyle choice, so it's a choice that a lot of people would want to make. You think that semen is delicious to a lot of people, and these are choices that people make. So it seems like perhaps if it wasn't for the Bible and the teachings of Moses, et cetera, that you might have been tempted by those choices as well. Is that the case? Have you been tempted?
Oh, absolutely. No doubt about it. You know, Jake, I spent 3.5 years in prison. So, yeah, I saw that. And was tempted, but I didn't yield to temptation, by the way. You need to know that. And make sure you publish that as well.
All right, so you thought about having gay sex, and that was tempting to you, and you thought that might be delicious or really fun, but you decided to hold strong and not do it. Is that roughly right?
That is true.
This dude is gayer than Doogie Howser in a field full of dicks. You got to stop scapegoating. You have to realize that your religion is bullshit and come out of the closet and enjoy your life, Pastor Manning. I know I shouldn't be giving you friendly advice here to actually, make you a more fulfilled, joyful person, but I'm going to do it anyway. There it is. All right, guys, I'm out of time. I love you. I'll see you all tomorrow. Peace. Mwah.